Hare Krishna. Does anyone know where we left off yesterday? Where did we leave off yesterday? Everyone's keeping notes. I just thought everyone knew we're in Dallas. Yes, Dallas, Texas. It was my first full week of personal service with Srila Prabhupada. And he was so patient. You have to imagine the patience that Srila Prabhupada had dealing with all of his teenagers and 21-year-old disciples, thousands of them. And by 1972, now there were over 70 temples. 1970, there were 32 temples. 1971, there were 60 temples. In 1 year, there were 3 temples a month made in 1 year. This is how rapidly Krishna consciousness movement was expanding. So by 1972, now, the fall of 1972, there were over 80 temples all around the world. And Srila Prabhupada had so many young neophyte Vaishnavas that he was training up. And as far as personal servants went, almost one a year, Prabhupada would have a new servant that he had to show all over again how to do the simplest things. So now it was my turn. I was maybe sixth or seventh servant that he had had. And again, he was so patient showing me all the little things. Sometimes he would chastise and get a little angry, get a little loud. But generally, he just went on and he would show you how to do this and how to do that, how to use this cooker, how he liked everything done. Prabhupada liked everything ready. Like I said, I would prepare his desk for him, would set out his clothes for him. If, you know, the servant's job, Prabhupada told me that a first-class servant was one who did things without being asked. If you have to ask, that's not first class, that's second class. It's a class, it's better than third class, but it's only second class. You ask him and he does it. That's second class servant. First class, he anticipates, he knows the needs of his master, and he has everything prepared. Towels are in the bathroom, the soap is there. You know, his gumshoe is there for taking massages. Little things. Prabhupada said they're all little things. But if they're done, then there's no disturbance. You can go on and had so many things to take care of every day. So many disciples to take care of. So many temples. Temples are opening up and people running the temples like at Bhaktivedanta Manor. How old was Tribhuvanath? He was 17-year-old temple president. 17 years old. And he's running temple in London, the biggest city in the world at the time, one of the most important cities in the world. And he was the temple president of our International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So this is how things were going on by Prabhupada's mercy. So after Dallas, Prabhupada was now working his way. Actually, he was working his way to India. I was telling this story Sunday, so we'll just talk about it briefly. For today, when was the end of Kartik? Today, yesterday? Today. I've heard yesterday, I've heard today. It's confusing. Anyway, so it's a nice time because in my travels with Prabhupada, when I became his servant, this was his focus, was going to Vrindavan for Kartik. It was the one time that Prabhupada spent the entire month of Kartik in Vrindavan was 1972, from October 15th to November 15th. And he was, as I had mentioned at Sunday class, he was so excited. So this was also a theme as he traveled from Dallas, he went to Los Angeles for a short time, San Francisco. He spent 3 days in San Francisco. And that was also very sweet. I remember when we arrived there, Prabhupada stayed in a house. It was just like a cottage. And it was not owned by any devotee family, but some hippie family that were sympathetic to the devotees. San Francisco, of course, was the second city Prabhupada traveled to, right? Back in 1967, after he had established New York and everything was going well then, he had his first separation from the devotees there. He was leaving these devotees that he had made in New York, and for the first time, people were feeling separation from Srila Prabhupada. He was about to leave, and he went to San Francisco, which San Francisco was even more crazy than New York City. This San Francisco in 1967 was the height of what we called the hippie movement back then, you know, drugs, sex, rock and roll, and basically anarchy. You know, young people didn't want to follow anyone. The motto was, don't trust anyone over 30. These were people that were becoming devotees, Vaishnavas. They didn't trust anyone over 30. Garga Muni says this, how Prabhupada, of course, was 70 years old. So even though they didn't trust anyone over 30, Prabhupada, they considered the most revolutionary person, even more so than they were. The youngs were revolutionary. They were rejected all their parents' values, so many things. But Prabhupada, they accepted, huh? Because, of course, he was giving them something much higher. He was giving them Krishna. So on this return to San Francisco now in 1972, Prabhupada stayed in this little house, and I heard it took them days and days to clean this place because it was filthy. It was lived in by this hippie family. They were nice, but they weren't clean. Now, our habit, many people, especially hippies, weren't the cleanest people necessarily because too much intoxication. So they had to clean and clean and clean before Prabhupada's arrival. So it was just ready, barely ready when Prabhupada got there. And of course, I didn't know this. I walked in. It was a very nice place. That's all I saw. The kitchen was nice, and there was a new wok was in there, and rolling pin, and containers with spices. And we would always have that big jar of ghee, fresh cow ghee, golden ghee, would be there. So everything looked nice to me, but I found out later on that getting it ready was a big task. But when they got in, they were just a handful of devotees, six or eight devotees received Prabhupada there. And he went in and he sat down. And everyone was just sitting down around Prabhupada. And he looked and he said, this is not the proper way to receive a guest. Didn't say spiritual master. And he said a guest. He said, according to Vedic culture, he said, when a guest arrives, he said, you should sit them down, you wash their feet, because after traveling, it was very exhausting. He said, and you should wash their feet and offer them a nice plate of foodstuff, fruits, whatever, juice, things like this. So immediately all the devotees could understand that they hadn't done a very good job of receiving Prabhupada, so they put together a quick paraphernalia, got a bowl and some pitcher, and then they did these things. So Prabhupada even there had to instruct the proper way to receive a guest, he said, what to speak of your spiritual master. So while there, Prabhupada spoke at a few engagements, I remember at that time, what was his name was there in San Francisco, famous devotee? Left his body so many years ago. Anyway, he was the pillar of Jayananda Prabhu. He was there, and he was another one. He was always in the kitchen. You know, he just did his service, never looked to just get some adoration from Prabhupada, or even his association. He was always happy doing service. And I remember one program, that while we were there, after the program, all the devotees were coming up. You know, they just wanted to get some association with Prabhupada, to hear him speak, to talk to him, just to sit by him. So they were all coming up to Prabhupada. And Prabhupada looked around and he said, where's Jayananda? And he was in the kitchen preparing popcorn for distribution. So Prabhupada got up and he went into the kitchen to see Jayananda. He didn't care about anybody else. Everybody was just trying to get his company. You know? But he went up and he went and saw Jayananda, and he was in shakiness, shaking the pot, making popcorn. And Prabhupada went and saw him. This is how you get darshan, right, of pure devotee and darshan of Krishna. You engage in devotional service. So then he went and exchanged pleasantries with Jayananda, asked how he was. And he was just doing his service. He was very happy. And again, that day, it made popcorn for everyone. And they were distributing. And Prabhupada said, "What is this?" I said, "Oh, it's popcorn." He said, "I'll try some." So Prabhupada took it. And when they left, they took a ride. And they were going back to the house, and they went by the Harinam party, and they were all distributing this popcorn, you know. And they went very slow past Harinam, so everyone was looking in the car window, and Prabhupada was sitting there, and he had his popcorn. He had just finished, so he had his hand, he kept his hand in the bag. There was no water or anything to wash, so he just left his hand in the bag the whole ride home. So when he went by, they were all looking in, and Prabhupada was smiling, nodding in appreciation of the service everyone was doing, chanting, distributing popcorn and BTGs. So the next night, they had a program, and again they tried to give him popcorn. He said, "No, no, no." He said, "It's very good," he said, "but I have trouble digesting," he said. So he didn't eat popcorn that night. But he went back home to the house, and he said to me, "So I'll have some chips and puris." This was one of the first times I was cooking in the evening for Prabhupada, and he didn't want popcorn because he couldn't digest, but he asked for puris and chips. And I said, "Okay." So I went into the kitchen and made puri dough and made some puris, and then I had to make chips, which for me, I was an American boy, and it was very difficult for me, this idea of making chips, because we have potato chips in America, and I just started slicing this potato with a knife as thin as I could, just slice, 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 slice to make chips. And I fried them in the wok, you know, just put them on the plate, sprinkled some salt on them. I made two puris, put it on his plate as quick as I could. You would always, everything, I always thought we had to do as quick as you could, you know, because Prabhupada was waiting. So he was sitting in his room, and I came in and I put the plate down, my silver plate, and hot milk was always there, very hot milk in the evening. And two puris, puffed up puris, and chips, potato chips. And I put it down and offered obeisances, and when I got up, Prabhupada looked at me. He said, "What is this?" I said, "It's puris and potato chips." He said, "These are not chips." And I had no idea. I figured I just didn't make them very nicely. He said, "This is not right," he said. It was the first time Prabhupada said the discouraging word to me. So I became so much anxiety. He said, "Never mind." He said, "Anyway, go on," he said. And so I offered obeisances. I left the room. And I went back and I'm rolling puris. I'm thinking, what did I do wrong? I couldn't understand what I did wrong. And I'm rolling another puri and cook it, puffs up, I bring it in. And Prabhupada said, "These are very nice," he said, "very good." He said, "Bring some more." So I said, "Yes, Prabhupada." I was all happy now, so I went back in, rolled another puri, had some chips that I brought in. I never figured out for 20 years what I had done wrong until I was living in England. And of course, then I realized chips in England, just like here, chips meant we called fries. In America, we called them French fries. So Prabhupada was asking for chips, which he meant just cut up potato. It would have been so easy to do, but I had to make it very complicated because I was making crisps, which they call in England, and here, I don't know what you call crisps and chips, probably interchangeable by now. But it was... Prabhupada never said anything again, and he never asked for chips from me again. That was my one chance while I was with him that he asked for chips. And although he said he liked them, which was also, Prabhupada would do that too. He didn't like to keep you in too much anxiety, you know. He'd didn't like to see you in anxiety about your service. So he said they were good, and he did eat them. And they were nice, but they weren't chips. So that was my experience, my main experience in San Francisco at that time. And we had spent a few days in Los Angeles. I mentioned that garden in Los Angeles. It was a very sweet, wonderful place. And when the weather was nice, which was most of the time in Los Angeles, it was warm. In the morning sun, Prabhupada would take his massage in the garden. So we would have to come down the flight of stairs in his gamcha. So we would both have our gamchas on. And I remember one instruction. When we arrived in Los Angeles, Prabhupada told me, he said, you cook, the cook in Los Angeles, his previous servant, had always cooked in the kitchen, the temple kitchen. And Prabhupada lost his servant in the temple kitchen. That's how he lost his servant. The servant was a brahmachari, and after spending some time in the kitchen there, it became very hot in the kitchen. So, because you would cook for Prabhupada, and you would massage him, and you would come down. So you only had a gamcha on, and you were in the deity's kitchen. So there were many devotees in there. Many lady devotees were in there as well. So anyway, he lost his brahmachari servant in the kitchen in New Dwarka. So the first thing he said to me when we got to New Dwarka was, he said, you'll cook in your room. He said, don't go into the kitchen. So he was trying to protect me. He told me to keep out of the kitchen in New Dwarka. He said, and you can do the cooking in your room. And they had brought in a stove. I said, just a two-burner stove. So when I got there, there was just this two-burner stove on the floor and nothing else. That was it. So that was the kitchen. So I erected a little kitchen. I got some blocks and put a board across, so I had a place to prepare things and brought spices in, so I had to prepare everything. And then we would daily go down and take massage in the garden, which was just before noontime. Prabhupada said so many things about massage. He would tell me over time that he said that the morning sun, he said, gives you energy, you know, according to Ayurveda. Prabhupada never spoke to us about Ayurveda and being following the principles of Ayurveda, but he would always say how to do things, and these things were all there according to Ayurveda. Rising early, taking cold bath. You say the morning sun gives you energy, right? And the afternoon sun takes it away, drains your energy, you would say. And the massage, he said three things kept him alive. And it was his massage, his morning walk, which Prabhupada did every morning wherever he was, just at sunrise. And his Ayurvedic medicine, which I described, he took one tonic, it's Jagendra Ras he took. And he also told me that massage, he said, was passive wrestling. Once I was rubbing his back, it was so hard. And he laughed. He said, this is passive wrestling. He said, you do all the work and I get all the benefit, he said. So he enjoyed it very much, his wrestling. So I got to wrestle Prabhupada. That's what I was doing, wrestling every day, Prabhupada's body. So the one day we were in there, and I'm giving Prabhupada massage, and it was much like this Vrindavan forest right here. Huh? It had like a 6-foot wooden fence all the way around. You couldn't see in at all. And just the gate, a wooden gate that would close. So we went in and started giving massage. And at the bottom of the gate was a space like this much. Just barely that much at the very bottom of the gate. So the one day I'm in there and I'm massaging Prabhupada's back. And this little kitten crawled under the gate. And the thing could fit. It was like this big. Just a baby cat, little kitten. Came crawling under the fence. And it came right up to Prabhupada where I was massaging him. And it just started going, you know how the cats, you know, kittens, they rub against you. So it didn't go in front of Prabhupada, but it went behind, in between Prabhupada and myself. and just started rubbing up against Prabhupada's back, and it would go on the right side and then turn around and come back side. And it just kept going back and forth. So I'm just rubbing Prabhupada. I would ignore the cat, and Prabhupada saw it, and so this went on for a few minutes. It was going back and forth, rubbing up against Prabhupada, back and forth, and I'm just massaging, and I thought it was a cute little kitten for a minute. And then after a few minutes, Prabhupada said, okay, he said, that's enough. So I picked up this cat, and I walked to the edge of the fence and just dropped him over the side. And I went back and started massaging Prabhupada. So about 1 minute goes by, I'm rubbing his back. So the cat came right back in and does the same thing, starts rubbing up against Prabhupada. So again, I had to pick him up. So this time I picked him up, and I'm a little more physical with him, you know, and I picked him up, and I dropped him over the side and go back down, and I start rubbing Prabhupada again. So, of course, he came right back in, this kitten, he or she, whatever. This kitten comes right back in and starts rubbing up, and now it's meow, meow, and it's rubbing up against Prabhupada. So again, I pick it up, and this time I walked over by the gate, and I pushed them down, and I found some bricks, you know, some blocks. So I blocked the gate up so he couldn't come in, because just was insistent on coming in, getting Prabhupada's mercy. And I blocked up the gate, and I went back, and I start rubbing Prabhupada again, you know. And for the next rest of the massage, all you heard was, meow! I was just crying and crying by the gate because it couldn't get in to see Prabhupada anymore. They go, meow, meow, and I'm just rubbing Prabhupada. Prabhupada never said anything. The kitten went away finally. But for some reason, I was very excited to get Prabhupada's association. So that was just a little thing happened in Los Angeles, and I was becoming more accustomed to doing things now, learning how to cook. And then Prabhupada was talking about going to Vrindavan. He was so eager to go to be in Vrindavan for Kartik. He was very excited to be there. I thought it was so nice. Today we're just ending this Kartik, and on our trip we were just getting towards Kartik. So then he stopped in Hawaii. And in Hawaii they said there was no facilities in the temple, and they had Prabhupada stay in the Ilokai. It was a hotel, big high-rise hotel in Hawaii. This was 1972. So he had two rooms, one for Prabhupada and one for his entourage. And that day I remember I got my first serious chastisement, short but serious. And it was another simple thing, and I had brought Prabhupada his plate at lunchtime, and after he took prasadam, I went back and I took the plates, and I'm transferring everything, and I'm washing his plates, and a devotee came in to where I was, and he said, Prabhupada wants to see you right away. And, you know, I was a little, I said, well, okay, I said, I'll be right in, you know. And I kept washing his plates. So then he went back in, and a minute later he comes back, Prabhupada wants to see you right now. And I said, so I left everything and I went in. And he just started yelling at me. He said, are you a Brahmin? He said, you're... And I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, then why haven't you cleaned this place? He said, you picked the plates up. He said, and the table hasn't been cleaned. He said, is this what you know? He said, is this how you've been trained as a Brahmin? So now, already I was starting to figure that you can't give any answers to Prabhupada. Whatever you say... You know, I learned very quickly, whatever you say, if you gave a reason, there was never a reason. There was never an excuse. So this was my training, like right away was, I never said anything. And I say, finally I used to start saying, I'm just a fool. That was my response to Prabhupada when he chastised me with, he said, well, then why have you, and I say, I'm just a fool, Prabhupada. And that kind of lesson, because I saw with so many other devotees, if you tried to give a reason, then you would get more chastisement, because he always defeated whatever reasons or arguments you would have. You know, and I never liked this going back and forth with Prabhupada, trying to give an explanation, and because you got more chastisement. So he just went on a little bit and called me a malecha. It's a word I heard off and on over 2 years that I was a malecha. You know, he would say, and so many stories, different things and chastisements, Prabhupada would say. But So I went back in and got a cloth and cleaned his spot. So then everything was, that was okay. It was done. And then we were working our way across, again, getting to Delhi and Vrindavan. And we made one stop in Bangkok, Thailand. And there again, I had my, Prabhupada said my nature, he said I was easygoing. You know, and he didn't say it was a fault. It was just my nature that I was easygoing. And sometimes that didn't help me in my service with Prabhupada. And that also happened in Bangkok. He asked for milk, hot milk at nighttime. And we had no facility at all. Again, we were staying in a hotel. And he said, get some hot milk. So, of course, I went down into the kitchen of this very nice hotel in Bangkok. And I have my things, and I was saying, I need to make some hot milk. And everyone gave me a really hard time, you know. I said, no, you're not allowed. Da, 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 da. So after a few minutes, I just went back up, and I just kind of walked in Prabhupada's room. My head was down. He says, where's my milk? I said, they won't let me do anything. And Prabhupada just looked at me like... And there was this one at the time, it was Sannyasi Sudama Vipra Maharaj. He had a nickname. His nickname was Big Dave. And he was basically a gunda turned devotee by Prabhupada's mercy. But he was very much a bully. And he just looked at me, he looked at Prabhupada, and he grabbed the things and said, I'll get your milk, Prabhupada. And he went down. He went downstairs. I didn't even go down. He went down, and 5 minutes later, he comes back up with a glass of hot milk for Prabhupada and hands it to him. And he just looked at Prabhupada. He said, sometimes you have to be a little insistent. And Prabhupada just smiled. And he turned to Burajan, and he said, Shrutakirti is not serious. So that was, and it was sometimes I had this problem with one of the deficiencies I see in my service. It's sometimes I wouldn't do whatever was necessary if it meant treading on, using a little force. Sometimes you had to use a little force to accomplish. In Krishna consciousness, we have to do that sometimes. Have to be a little forceful. So I missed this opportunity. So then the next day, I was massaging Prabhupada in his room before lunch. So it was around noon, and again, Burajan was in there. He was one of the older devotees, a very bright, scholarly devotee, good devotee. And I was behind Srila Prabhupada, and I'm massaging. And Prabhupada just kind of sat there, and he just kind of smiled and said, he said, my God brothers, he said, they criticize me, he said, for having women live in the temples. He said, in the Gaudiya Math, of course, it was, women were never allowed in the temple. He said, but in your country, in America, he said, that I saw, in order to spread this Krishna consciousness movement, I needed to have women in the temple, he said, because in America, men and women live together freely. He said, this was your custom. He said, so I had to have women. He said, otherwise there was no question of spreading this movement. He said, so I made this adjustment. And he said, of course, then he would get men and women had to be married, not that they could be together and not be married. He said, so I did these things. He said, but my God brothers criticized. He said, but in the Gaudiya Math, he said, in the temple, no one is in the temple. He said, simply worshiping deity, taking some money, he said, like this. And he said, the only time there's anyone comes to the temple, he said, is in Mayapur at the festivals. He He said, then they get big crowds. He said, and who are the people? He said, women in white. He said, simply women coming to the temples, he said. He said, but they criticize me. So then I continue massage. And I asked Prabhupada, it was one of the very few questions you could count on one hand how many questions I asked Prabhupada. And I said, Prabhupada, I said, how do we know the difference between making an adjustment and changing a principle? Because Prabhupada said he made a little adjustment, and it was a very big adjustment. Right? Prabhupada said, little adjustment. So I said, how do we know the difference? And he didn't say anything for a little bit. And I just continued massage. And then he just opened his eyes and he said, that requires a little intelligence. And then he didn't say anything more. So of course this was a very great understatement by Prabhupada. It required the knowledge of pure devotee. He knew exactly what to do. It was by this principle Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness all over the world, understanding what needed to be done. So only Prabhupada had that ability to do that. It had never been done. This Hare Krishna mantra had never left the shores of Bharat Varsha before Srila Prabhupada came to America. And then from there, from that one point, Prabhupada did everything. He tried so many things, you see, if you read letters of 1965 and before 1966, just begging his godbrothers, you send me one of your disciples. Preferably, he should know how to speak English. He should know how to play the kol, he said, like that. And you can send one other thing, he said, and be able to speak nicely, you know, give class. He said, but if he can just do any one of those things, please send one disciple. Because he wanted to have experienced people who were new, understood Vedic culture to help spread the Krishna consciousness movement. He said how there's great opportunity in the West. He said, but I need some assistance. You know, send instruments and do this, do that. He said, we can have a temple built here in New York. So many things, but no one had anything to offer Prabhupada. So then he saw what Krishna sent him. He sent him these hippies. So Prabhupada said, this is Krishna's desire. This is who he was going to build. So Prabhupada took whatever Krishna provided and he saw this is how we'll start this Krishna consciousness movement. So he utilized what Krishna sent, but he tried so many times in contacting different god brothers, asking for things. Even when I was his servant, he was still contacting, and please come to America, he would say. Please come to America. I have so many untrained disciples. He said, they're just eager to learn. He said, I have temples all over the world I need to go to. If you could come to America and just stay there and help them. No one was ever interested. For whatever reasons, no one would do it at that time. And then, anyway, that's in the future. So, this happened in Thailand. So then finally, Prabhupada went to Delhi and arrived in Vrindavan. And for me, as I said, everything was arranged by Shyama Sundar. So I had a visa, I had a passport, I didn't know anything. And all of a sudden I was transported from the land of the Malechas to Vrindavan. And I was in Vrindavan with Srila Prabhupada on October, the very first day of Kartik. We arrived and Prabhupada went back to Radha Damodar Temple, which was his residence. He considered his home, Radha Damodar Temple. And they were very happy. They gave him a very nice reception. I remember it was like the late morning. I remember the doors were closed, the deity doors were closed. And Gurachand Goswami, he was nearly blind. He had these big, thick glasses, I remember. He was an old man by then. And he greeted Prabhupada and took him up to the altars. And they opened the doors for Prabhupada so he could take darshan. And all this was so new to me. I only experienced our temples in America. It's all I knew. So to be in India, Radha Damodar Temple is completely different. And they opened the doors and then closed the doors. And then a few minutes later, again, they opened the doors and they had the big Govardhan Shila. And all offered obeisances and took darshan. And Prabhupada said, if you just circumambulate Govardhan Shila here at Radha Damodar, he said, it's as good as walking around entire Govardhan Hill. I didn't even know. I thought Govardhan Hill was maybe the size of this room. This was my idea, you know, this is how much I knew. I just went to Govardhan for the first time, visited my son there, my son and daughter, and daughter-in-law, and I saw how big Govardhan Hill was. So I thought, walking around Govardhan Hill, how hard can it be? You know, but I saw how hard it can be walking around circumambulating Govardhan. So he said, you do this three times. So, of course, we all walked around the Govardhan Shila three times. So, now again, we're in India, in Vrindavan, and Jamuna and Gurudas, they were there. They were president and running Vrindavan Temple. And Prabhupada, I gave him massage, as I always did every day. I had done this for over a month now. I was giving Prabhupada massage every day. But for the first time, I was told, you don't have to cook. Jamuna is here and she's cooking for Prabhupada. I thought that was nice, because it was hard to do both things at the same time. Even though I did it for 2 years, there was always some anxiety cooking. The cooker was going on while I'm massaging Prabhupada at the same time. There was always some anxiety. So I said, okay. So I gave Prabhupada his massage, and after massage, he went and took bath. Just now it's all different. We weren't in the West. You just turned on and there was hot water. I had to learn about these little things you stuck in a bucket of water to heat it up, you know. What do they call them? Yeah. Immersion heaters, yes. I found out about an immersion heater, you know. So now Prabhupada was just bathing out of one bucket of water with this. And you had to remember to put that heater in every day at the beginning of massage. For me, these were like just complicated. So to not cook was such a relief, because everything else became so much more complicated. Getting laundry done, even for Prabhupada, I had a hard time finding someone that would wash his cloth in India. Imagine. In America, they would line up. You'd have 100 women just waiting, begging to do anything. Polish his cooker, you know, polish his cartels, do his laundry. Men and women, anyone, were eager to do personal service. Now I was in India and everybody was just trying to be healthy. So all they thought was how to wash their own laundry. They couldn't even imagine washing Prabhupada's. That would be another whole 2 hours of doing things, you know. So there weren't a lot of volunteers there, and I was like so surprised at how different it was in India. But Jamuna was cooking, so after massaging, I laid Prabhupada's cloth out and on his bed, and then I went to his desk and arranged everything. And then I just went out and sat on the veranda there, and I started chanting. And I actually, it was the one time in my whole Krishna consciousness, for that 1 month, I chanted 64 rounds a day, because I had so much time. I just started chanting, and I heard it was a nice thing to do during Kartik in Vrindavan. And I was young enough and enthusiastic enough that I was able to do it. So Prabhupada dressed and sat down, put tilak on, said his noon gayatri, and then he got up and left his sitting room, and he walked by me there at the veranda. I offered obeisances, and he walked into the kitchen. And I've never even been in Prabhupada's kitchen at Radha Damodar Temple. But he walked in through the little doors. He bent down, bent down the door so he could get in, and went inside and walked over to the side where he would sit down. And all I can see is Jamuna. And I could see through the screen door, and there's, you know, she's using just a coal stove, just a little bucket, coal stove and cow dung. And all this is just complete, so new to me. And I see her, she's rolling chapatis and the things right on the floor, you know. It's just, everything was happening right on the floor, which was also very unusual in the West. You know, you stand up there and all these fancy counters and everything. But here, everything was done on the floor. And she's rolling chapatis, and her whole body's shaking, and she's rolling and rolling. And so after about 10 minutes, I became curious, and I don't know what came over me, and I just thought I'd peek in. Because I'd always served Prabhupada as prasada, every day, like that's what I was doing, you know. So I thought, for some reason, I thought, let me peek inside. So I opened the door and I peek inside, and Prabhupada was where he sat for so many years doing translating work, taking his lunch, and he was just sitting there. And the door creaked open, you know, and he just looked at me. And he said, have you eaten? And I said, no, Prabhupada. I said, after you're finished, I said, oh, take your remnants. This is what, you know, I used to eat Prabhupada's remnants every day. So I said, oh, after you're finished. He said, no. He said, come sit down. Take prasadam. And I said, no, Prabhupada. I said, that's, you know, I can't do that. Prabhupada always ate alone. He just always sat there and ate prasadam alone. I just insisted. I said, no. Prabhupada said, no. He said, it's okay. Come sit down. And he invited me into his kitchen at Radha Damodar Temple. So finally I said, from then on, that was my experience. Prabhupada offered me something, I just accepted it. You just, with greed, you know, in your heart, you just wholeheartedly accepted it, because it was, to get anything from Prabhupada was the most wonderful thing. And also Prabhupada liked to do things. Prabhupada reciprocated because we were doing service. And he enjoyed these things. But this was exceptional. He had me come and sit down. So I sat down right next to Prabhupada at Radha Damodar Temple. I was just so young and foolish. I never even appreciated how wonderful it was. It was the one and only time it ever happened that I sat down with him and took prasadam with him. So very quickly, Jamuna was so expert. She put everything down and filled my little katoris up. You know, we didn't have katoris and tallies in the West. We had off pieces of wax paper on the floor that would stick to the floor when you put, you know, the dal and rice in there. The paper would stick to the floor on the tile floor. So now, here I was in India, in third world country, and everything was first class, nice tally, stainless steel tally with katoris, and she starts putting in the rice and dal and different vegetables, things I had never seen before, these funny-looking subjis that all were so artfully done, and things were cut so precisely with pretty colors. And, you know, I just made things. I didn't know what I was doing. And I started taking prasadam. So Prabhupada and I are eating prasadam together now, Radha Damodar. And she puts a chapati down, you know, puffing up on the little stove, and everything was so good. And we just quietly took prasadam, and she's giving Prabhupada a chapati, then she'd make another one and give me a chapati. And we just sat and ate together. And Prabhupada finished, and I finished, and it was so good. You know, what she made was so good. I'd never tasted anything so good. So Prabhupada looked at me, big smile. He said, so, he said, everything was okay. I said, yes, Prabhupada. I said, very nice. And he said, very good. He said, tomorrow you can cook for her. And she cooked for us all every day for that month. It was the nicest month. We ate so well, and she didn't let me cook for her at all. And neither could I have even figured out how to cook in India, in Vrindavan there. And it wouldn't have been nearly as nice as what she was cooking, but she wouldn't let me do it, but I didn't do it. But the principle was there, and Prabhupada expressed that principle for me, not that you just accept service from your god brother, your god sister, but you also have to serve them. Because Prabhupada would say, that's Prabhu. We always called everyone Prabhu, you know. Even I would call Jamuna Prabhu. Sometimes Mataji, sometimes Prabhu, is interchangeable. But Prabhu is always there. So he says, so what is the question? You accept service from your Prabhu. We call you master, he would say, but then we say, oh, Prabhu, will you please go get me this? Prabhu, will you do this? So how can you address us Prabhu and then you ask them to serve you? So this was everyone, because ourselves, we were dasa, right? We were servants, and everybody was Prabhus. So this Prabhupada would teach us this as well, you know, that we had to be ready to offer all service to others. And then, of course, you can chant Hare Krishna very nicely. So, but that was such a sweet, wonderful opportunity that Prabhupada gave me at that time that I'll never forget. Taking prasadam with him in Radha Damodar, which Prabhupada said was the very center, he said, is the hub of the wheel of the spiritual world. Because that's where this Krishna consciousness movement started. So he said it was the center of the spiritual world. So I have a very attachment to see whenever I go to Vrindavan, always first I want to go to Radha Damodar temple because that's the first place I was with Srila Prabhupada. Krishna Balaram Mandir, that all came later on. I also got to be there with him. But everyone, when you go to Vrindavan, you always have to go to these. This is where everything started, and even before New York, this is where everything started, this whole society. And take darshan of Srila Rupa Goswami, so beautiful there, and Bhajan Kutir. So Prabhupada had said when he went there, he was speak, and he spoke every evening. He spoke Nectar of Devotion. Prajumna would read, and then Prabhupada would interject, give commentary. And it was all done in English. As I had mentioned the other day, said it was for his Western disciples. He was showing everyone in Vrindavan his Western Vaishnavas. So he spoke in English. All the classes were in English. And my job was I would record the classes. And we had, at that time, you see later on, there's so many more conversations, morning walks and things. At that time we didn't have cassette tapes. We had this reel-to-reel tape player, a Ur, it was called. It was a German. It was kind of big and bulky. And you had reels of tape. But when we left the West, I had like 6 tapes. We were in India for a few months. So at first I was recording on high speed, and then I thought things aren't going to work very well. So I started slowing down the speed of the tape recorder to get as many lectures as we could on these tapes. And you know, it was a little pondal there in Vrindavan, 1972, with this, not much different now, even with the speaker systems, it would sometimes be on, sometimes go off. Electricity was always going off. But it was a very nice place, the courtyard there. And he would start to give his class just as dusk was coming. The sun was just going down, and so all the birds would be flying back into the trees, and so lots of chattering. You see the parrots flying, you know, 2 by 2, and all the monkeys bouncing off the roofs, and it was very sweet. The only disturbances, of course, were flies. Flies and mosquitoes would start to come in the evening. So Prabhupada was sitting on his Vyasasan, and I had microphone rubber band tied around to record his lecture. And the one day, it was early on, there was like 50, 60 devotees in the courtyard, and Prabhupada's speaking, and I'm fanning him with the peacock fan. He's already left. I'm fanning him with the peacock fan, or chamara fan, like that, you know. And I was feeling very happy. I was in Vrindavan at Radha Damodar Temple. Prabhupada's my spiritual master, and I am his personal servant, you know, and I'm fanning, like, all fancy, doing my art, because he's my deity. I'm doing arati to him, you know, and Prabhupada's speaking Nectar of Devotion there, and all the other devotees are just sitting there listening. But I have my service, you know, fanning, and flies are buzzing around Prabhupada, but I'm not even conscious, I'm just fanning. So finally, with all these speakers are all out there, and Prabhupada said, get someone up here with some intelligence. Because I wasn't getting rid of any flies. And like I was like, phew, sorry, phew, I like became that big all of a sudden. I went from being so proud I was Prabhupada's servant, and now I was. And this devotee boy comes up from the West, and he was a very big fellow. and he's what we would call eccentric, very eccentric devotee. And he came up and I was stunned. He just grabs it out of my hands. And I went back down and I just start playing with the tape recorder. I didn't have to do anything, but I just started, you know, making believe I had things to do. And I'm like just, and he starts fanning Prabhupada with this fan. And he starts, and the flies were there. And Prabhupada just starts speaking again. He just took off 1 second, you know, to chastise me in front of all my God brothers and God sisters. And he starts going like this. And he's just like wildly with this fan, you know? And I'm like, you know, this is crazy, you know? And Prabhupada's speaking, and he's just, so all the flies, they just, everything, flies, mosquitoes, all living things just went away, you know, the birds, the monkeys, everyone was just, and like without missing a breath, Prabhupada's speaking, and he just looks at him and goes, like that, it gives him acknowledgement, and then I was like, ah, you know, so then I even became smaller. And I just sat there the rest of the time. I was in shock, you know. And everything went on, and Prabhupada didn't miss anything. He just continued to give his discourse on nectar of devotion. And then, so it was all over, and finally, we all offered obeisances. I couldn't wait to get out of the courtyard that day. I was so embarrassed. That's what happens when you become proud. See, this is a spiritual master. He's very expert at cutting through your pride, you know, and it's very easy because I was such a fool, you know. So he cut right through it. So then I remember, and it was because I always would be right beside Prabhupada when he walked, wherever he walked, you know, I'd be right there next to him. But I remember him walking from the courtyard to his room, and I was like 20 paces behind him. I couldn't even be near him. I was just so in shock. And we're walking, and he walks into his room, and Brahmachari comes up to me and says, oh, Prabhu, you're so fortunate, you know, to be able to get chastised like that by Srila Prabhupada, you know. And I just looked at him. I said, yeah. I still was unable to feel the benefit, you know. I still wasn't appreciating it. I was, because of my ego. And then we walked along, but that was my first acknowledge. I said, yes, Prabhu, it's very nice. And then Prabhupada just called me in and had me do something, and he was very happy and nice to me. He would always do that. He would never just chastise you and then leave you there. He would always call you in for something, and he would see how you were, you know. And if he saw you were distressed, he would say something to lift you up again, you know, give you a little service or some appreciation. So that was my first really big chastisement. I considered that at the time, it was one of my most difficult times because it was in front of everyone. It was so difficult, but now is most blissful, you know, because whenever Prabhupada chastised you, it was actually the sweetest thing because you can remember that. There's so many things you don't remember, but you always remember when he chastised you, you know. I can remember so many things that he called me fondly, so many fond words he would say. So that was one experience there in Vrindavan. There's so many we can tell. Today is Wednesday. Tomorrow's Thursday. Possibly, I talked with Radhanath Maharaj yesterday. He said he might be here tomorrow afternoon, of course, if not Friday morning, so all very eager for him to be here. And I'll continue with some, there's some more nice stories about Vrindavan, especially monkeys in Vrindavan. Those rascal monkeys, as Prabhupada would call them. But I think we can stop here today. If there's any questions, comments, additions? Prabhu? Your microphone?
Thank you, Prabhu, for your very wonderful narration. I was just wondering, in Vrindavan, of course, you were able to chant more rounds, but in the other places, I was just wondering how you, what time you would get to chant your rounds. And
there was a lot of opportunity to chant around Srila Prabhupada. Early in the morning, of course, he never really required anything. Morning walk was, you know, there's a nice story about that, that whole chanting. But morning walk was a good place. We could chant rounds there. Sometimes the thing with being with Prabhupada was it was very unregulated. Prabhupada was so regulated, but as a result, you had a tendency to become unregulated, you know, taking care of his regulation, you know. Wherever we went, Prabhupada just immediately adopted the schedule. He would, whatever time it was, he was set to go. Like he would come here, well, not here, into India, arrive in Delhi. He always arrived around midnight, 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning. Then he would go to the Delhi temple. So now you were flying a minimum of 8 hours, 12 hours, 18 hours, and he would arrive at the Delhi temple. You'd get in there 2, 3 in the morning. And, you know, 3 hours later, Prabhupada was ready for his morning walk, and you'd go out on a morning walk. You know, nowadays, when a devotee does that, you just, you know, you give him prasadam, send him to his room, and you don't expect to see him for maybe 24 hours, right? But because of jet lag, and, you know, you give, we have that compassion, you know, jet lag, and but that word didn't exist in Prabhupada's vocabulary or our vocabulary. It just wasn't there. He didn't accept jet lag. So as soon as you got at the temple, you just bam, and then he would give class in the morning, and then everything just went on from there, just as you hadn't traveled anywhere. Like now you go somewhere, and right, they say it takes you, you know, if you travel through 7 time zones, you know, that's what they say. It takes you 7 days for your body to become accustomed to the new time zone. We have so many ways that we justify not doing things, not doing our service, you know, because of having to adjust the body. But, you know, we know in Krishna consciousness there's no material adjustments are required, huh? Whatever. We just engage in devotional service. So, chanting in the morning, there was opportunity in, on the morning walk, and before the morning walk, if you got up early enough. I used to rise early. Some in his party, it was nice, because Prabhupada was like everything to us. He was not just our spiritual master. He was the temple president of his little entourage, and he was the temple commander, and he was the treasurer. And he used to literally like take care of us in so many ways. And if he saw you weren't getting up in the morning, sometimes he would say, where is my secretary? Where is my Sanskrit? And I say, oh, resting, Prabhupada. He'd say, call them in here. And then he would give us a lecture how important it was. It was in Vrindavan at that time. Once he said, where is secretary and Sanskrit editor? And they were his older devotees, like I had mentioned. They were from the earlier crew. And they weren't so much, like I, from the time I came to the temple, it was Mangal Arati, under Kirtanananda, everything was very, very strict. So when I came on to Prabhupada's party, I automatically was up for Mangal Arati. I didn't go because I wasn't allowed to go. I had to be waiting for Prabhupada to ring the bell. But they were from the earlier tradition, which Prabhupada introduced the morning program gradually and started going earlier and earlier until Mangal Arati. So sometimes they didn't care for that early of a morning, but they were always ready for the morning walk. A fresh tilak on, you know, we call it 7 o'clock tilak, you know. became an ISKCON standard, 7 o'clock tilak, we call it. And if you were really smart, you would smudge it up, so it didn't look like it was just put on. You can tell, you know, who has been up since 4 o'clock and who has got up at 6 o'clock. If you're expert, you can tell all the differences. So he said, where are they? So I went in and, you know. After a while, it became more and more fun to say, when Prabhupada would say, where is someone? You would say, oh, they're sleeping, Prabhupada, you know. Because we enjoyed seeing each other get chastised by Prabhupada. Because you would get it yourself, so, you know, you would you'd want to see them get it at every opportunity. You know, that's right, that's camaraderie amongst God brothers, you know, is see Prabhupada chastise. You say, call them. So they're all there in Prabhupada's room, Radha Damodar and Prabhupada sitting there. And he said, why are you sleeping? He said, you know, he said, simply sleep. One of his favorite, sleeping like dead men, Prabhupada would say, like dead men. And he would say, rising early, he said, is so important. And this again, this was, and he said, this was the Ayurvedic. He said, Prabhupada, he said, rising early in the morning and taking cold bath. He said, it's not even, he said, for spiritual life. He said, it's common sense. He said, it's good for your health to get up early before sunrise, take cold bath. He said, and if you do these things, he said, if you rise up before Mangalartik, he said, and you take cold bath, and you attend morning program, and you chant your 16 rounds, and follow the principles, he said, after 12 years, everything you say will be perfect. And I'm like, wow. You know? And then he said, so you must get up early in the morning. So he just told everybody, and of course, after a few days, they would be doing whatever, you know. And I was getting up early in the morning still. I had a habit. And I was the servant, so I had to do these things. I had to be there. Jai Shishi Radha Gopina. So I always had to be on call. And as I said, I didn't go to Mangalartik because I had to always be ready to serve Prabhupada. And it was in New Dwarka one time, one of my godbrothers. This was early on too. I became friends with different devotees there. That was like, I felt like that was one of my homes, New Dwarka, because Prabhupada was in and out of there so much. It was a friendly atmosphere, lots of householders, lots of nice devotees. So this one devotee kept on saying, why don't you come to Mangalartik? It's so much, you know, it'd be so nice to have you there, and nice kirtans, and there were hundreds of Prabhupada was there, so the place was packed. And finally, one morning, I said, okay. I said, because Prabhupada never calls me in the morning. He never, ever calls me before 5 o'clock. So I said, okay. So, of course, that was the one morning, because Prabhupada knew I wasn't there, you know. So I'm at Mangalartik, and I'm having a wonderful time with my governor, all chanting and dancing. And Prajumna, Prabhupada woke him up, because he was still sleeping. So Prabhupada rang the bell, I guess for so long. I didn't know because I wasn't there, which was my job. So Prajumna came, he said, Prabhupada wants to see you when he's really mad. See, again, this was how we treated each other, you know. Right away you let them know Prabhupada was upset with you, you know. He said, Prabhupada wants to see you and he's really mad, you know. He said, he's been calling you and calling you. I thought, oh no, you know, I really blew it. So I ran out of the temple room. I'm thinking, I just, you know, one time I went to Mangalartik, right? One day. So I go in, I offer obeisances, and Prabhupada said, I've been calling and calling, he said. You know, finally he said, Prajumna has come. He said, where were you? I said, oh, I was at Mangalartik, Srila Prabhupada. He said, you have no business being at Mangalartik. He said, your service is to be in your room 24 hours a day. He said, if I need something, he said, you have to be there. He said, you shouldn't go to Mangalartik. I just said, yes, Prabhupada. So he said, you have to be in your room. He said, if I need something, he said, who will be there? I said, yes, Prabhupada. He said, all right, go. Which meant go back to your room, or not to the temple, go back to your room. So I always say I was the only devotee in the movement. It was in Maya. Because I went to Mangalartik, you know. That was Maya. So we all have our service. Huh? Everybody else, if you don't go, that's Maya, he would say. He said, even you may be big, big devotees, said, you know, because some devotees, they would stop going. He would say, you may be so advanced that you don't have to go. He said, but you should go to set the example for others, you know. So Prabhupada would say, gave all these instructions. But me, it was Maya, Mangalartik, but only at that time. So I think we have to stop here for today. So we'll continue tomorrow. One more question? Do we have time? One more question. You had a question.
Did you also get to shave Prabhupada? Did you also get to shave Prabhupada?
shaved just his head. He was shaved. One day I shaved his face. I'll tell that story in a couple of days. It was, Prabhupada was very, very ill. And he was preaching. He was preaching. It was in Krishna Balaram Mandir. But otherwise I would do his head. And that was scary enough. Because the first time, he used to do his head with the electric clippers. His hair was very thin, so you would do it, his head would be shiny after. But he said to me, he gave me complete instructions on how to shave his head. And he would say, you turn on the clippers and you go to the sika. And then when you get to the sika, you turn it off. And you go back to the front and you turn it on. And you go to the... He said, because I don't like when it gets so hot. So you used to have to go zzz, and keep turning it off and on. And then he said, and be very careful around my ears. So like I was always, you know, I had to pull his ears down and you'd do it. And then you collect all the hairs and you would give them to the devotees. I gave away so many of Prabhupada's hairs from his head, you know, so many hairs are around there. So that I would do, shave his head. But at the time, he would do his own nails. He didn't get to do his nails, cut his, which I'm happy because those things were scary, you know, to do. His head was, that was enough, doing his head. And I used to do, his sika moved after I left. It moved from the very top of his head, which had very thin hair there. So he had a very big sika, but it was always very short. And later on, when Hari Sari came, it dropped down to at the very back, you know, because the hair grew. And then his sika became much smaller but more long. And he never expressed any. He didn't mind one way or the other. And he would shave his face every few days, as I did. I never cared to shave. And he never said anything. Never said to me, when are you going to shave your face or when are you going to cut your hair? Never. As long as it was done periodically, it was okay. Prabhupada didn't seem so fanatic about these things. I was, now, we, you know, one does whatever they're instructed, but and then when I became with Prabhupada, I stopped using a razor, I remember, on my head, except in Vrindavan, I would go out and I found you can get your whole shave and a haircut for like 2 rupees or something. I was amazed, you know, so I'd do that. Okay, we'll stop there. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.